and welcome to the Digiday podcast. I'm Kaylee Barber, media editor at Digiday.
And I'm Kimiko McCoy, senior marketing reporter here at Digiday.
Kimiko, it's been a weird time on Twitter slash X slash maybe this is on Threads too. I'll admit I don't spend time on Threads. But have you been following this like phony Willy Wonka like experience that apparently people in Scotland went to and then ended up calling the cops on because it was just like a full scam?
Calling the cops on a scam is insane. I do think the person that was scammed out of $50,000 may have also done well by calling the cops. But I have been seeing the memes from it. And Twitter is back. You know what I mean? It has not been dethroned because there is no other place where I would have gotten the reactions that I'm getting as I am on Twitter. But also, it is absolutely insane. It looked like a Halloween festivity more than it looked like something out of Willy Wonka. Don't get me wrong. The original Willy Wonka, real weird as it is. But this, very strange.
It did look like a spirit Halloween on like November 4th.
Exactly.
You know, like very much after Halloween, the inventory is completely depleted. The workers are exhausted and they're about to like pack up the rest of their stuff and like, you know, put it in storage until next July or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like that was the vibe it gave. But to your point about Twitter, X, whatever, I feel like there's an argument to be made with Twitter. Like, yes, like everyone was like, oh, the platform's dying. Like, you know, there's no, like, we have to find a new platform. Like, brands have largely abandoned it, publishers too. There's still been, I would say, like a sizable amount of like, I'm not going to call them cultural moments because they're just like meme moments, I feel like.
But yeah.
There's still been so much good, funny content coming out of that platform. And I just think, like, it hasn't been properly replicated yet, but,
no.
This week was just less, like, I don't know if anyone's on the side of Twitter where, like, Kate Middleton's reportedly missing. Not reportedly. So, like, this is all conspiracy theory on the fans' part, but, like, there is just there's so much discourse going on about these, like, crazy things, but it's just been fascinating. Like, I don't know. It was a entertaining week, to say the least.
It was. That site is, as it always has been, a hellscape with like bad intentions. But there are some moments worth chuckling about it on it for sure.
Yeah. I mean, going in a totally different direction now. Your guest this week was Victoria Vainberg, who is the CMO of Zola, and that's an online wedding registry and like planning platform, but they're also like expanding into the baby space, right?
Yes. I think what's most interesting from that, it was a really good time being able to talk with Victoria. And what was interesting is this idea that they're setting themselves up to be a lifetime customer brand, because you go from wedding registry and then, you know, what happens next? You start talking about babies, baby registry. And I think in the landscape where you have third-party cookies starting to, you know, Google has finally thrown down the gauntlet and that's starting to roll away, I think setting yourself up to build up that first party data is kind of like some of their inner workings that they got going on behind the scenes, which is smart to follow that customer from, you know, the wedding up until the baby and whatnot. So that was a large part of our conversation. We also talked about their influencer strategy, which is really robust. Social media right now, you can't even have like a strategy for TikTok, a strategy for Instagram, YouTube Shorts. It has all just become like social video. We are constantly having to like feed the beast, crank out content and whatnot. So that's another thing that they're focusing on, both in-house and having like an influencer strategy, user-generated content and whatnot. So we hit a lot of different topic points in our conversation. I'm excited for you guys to hear it.
Yeah, I mean, it's about to be start of wedding season. So I'm just excited to hear what someone who's very much deeply embedded in that industry has to say. So I'll let you guys get into it. Thanks, Kimiko.
Thank you. Welcome to the podcast, Bea. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks so much for having me.
I am so excited to have you. Obviously, being a company that caters to wedding registries and life moments. I would imagine the last couple of months have been a big one for you guys. You've got engagements happening December, January, February. But I always like to start these conversations with a fun question. Is that okay?
Of course.
Okay. I want you to tell me, if you can pull your memory, what is the most fun you've ever had at a wedding?
I would have to say my own, I hope. I think the most, I mean, I don't know if it's okay to say. I mean, I drank a lot at my own wedding in a respectable way, so I feel like I had a great time, but I was very like not into having a ceremony at first. I kind of just wanted to have a party because I don't like a lot of people paying attention to me. And we decided to have the ceremony instead. And it actually ended up being like one of my favorite things we did because we had some friends play music during it and it was very personalized and we took shots during the ceremony. So I guess it's a good sign that I still think my wedding was the most fun.
That sounds like an absolute dream. If anybody ever asked me, like, what's your ideal wedding? I'm like, we go to the courthouse and then everybody comes back to an open bar. That's my dream.
Yeah. Yes. That was the vibe I was going for, but we ended up having all the things and, you know, still a kind of low-key party atmosphere way. But I always kind of joke, I think the trend today is weddings are so personal and they're so you, and you know, you don't have to do all the things that we've been told are quote unquote normal or expected. So I like to think I'm a little ahead of the curve because when I got married, which is like 7 years ago, we were very much like, we're just going to do what we want. And if you like it, you like it. And if you don't, you don't. But it's kind of cool to see that that's just the way of the world right now, which is pretty fun.
Yeah. I've actually been seeing, not that I'm on TikTok anymore. I had to get off. The scrolling was getting insane. But before, like watching like wedding talk was really interesting. There was one of the most interesting concept that I saw was this couple decided to like forego, like they did like a semi-destination wedding where they got all of their closest friends together in a cabin and they just spent the entire weekend at this cabin. Mm-hmm. They did the ceremony, they did the honeymoon, all of it in like one fell swoop.
Yeah, I think that there's not really a right answer to how to have your wedding. And I think that's, you know, a thing that Zola really tries to live into. It's like, whatever kind of wedding you want to have, we're here to support you. We're not going to judge you. You want to, you know, elope, there's still a way Zola can help you. You want to have the very, you know, quote unquote, traditional version of your wedding. We can support you through that. And so I think making sure that we feel like a place you can be comfortable regardless of how you choose to have your wedding is what we are aspiring to show and to be.
Yeah, I would imagine that wedding talk maybe plays a big part of that. So I would love to kind of pick your brain on how you guys use wedding talk for your planning strategy, that type of thing.
Yeah, of course. So, you know, we definitely are watching and seeing what people are putting out there and trying to share, you know, funny or relatable or feel good content that we see on there, you know, for our audience. But I think we really look at the insights, both what, you know, is happening in the social community and what we hear from our own couples. And I think a nice piece of kind of surveying and speaking to our couples directly is you get, you know, the input from people who aren't posting on social media either, right? There's a subset of people who post, and then there are a lot of people who don't. And so I think we really look to combine those insights, and we're constantly speaking to and surveying our own couples. We put out what we call the first look report every year, and that gives us a sense of the trends that we see our couples actually activating on. And we share that out both with, you know, our vendor partners and with the community at large, with media, because I think that's also a very real view that, you know, often matches what you see on wedding talk and often is, you know, a different kind of real life perspective.
Yeah. Sarah, our audio producer, and I were doing some punting around before this conversation and learned that you guys did a survey. One of the questions was, how has AI been used in your wedding journey? And it looks like 32% of people are using it to kind of get the basis of their vows.
Yeah, totally. I think I mean, I think that's probably something we're going to continue to see. I mean, it's a hard thing to do. You're like, where do I start? I think we see people use it for, right, like helping to write a toast, you know, or if they're speaking at a wedding. So I don't know. I mean, there are great use cases for it. I think to have like a framework to start, definitely seeing it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I know that you guys are growing beyond just wedding registry. So I want to zoom this conversation out. We've got some real life moments like getting into the baby space and things like that. So talk a little bit about that expansion and how that growth impacts Zola from a marketing perspective.
So we have been hearing from our couples for a very long time. Like, why don't you guys have a baby registry or wedding registry? So amazing. Do you have a baby registry? We've seen people use the wedding websites like templates and turn them into baby shower websites. People are very creative with what they do. And so, you know, it was really a matter of like, when can we do this? You know, the wedding being a one-stop shop for everything, wedding planning, we have a lot of things to build and things to focus on in the business. But last year, we did find a way where we felt like we could launch the baby registry in, you know, a fairly quick amount of time. And so we decided to launch it as an app first. Mm-hmm. So there is, you know, a web experience for people to shop your registry, but building it, you do it on your app. And to your point, I mean, it is the natural progression, of course, for many people that you go into the baby territory post-wedding. But I think through COVID, we also saw what is very normal, which is a lot of people having babies before weddings, same time as weddings. The things started to mesh into one another. And so I think being able to service these very important life stages is something our, you know, original wedding couples have always wanted. I think it allows us to stick with them, you know, and, you know, of course, we'll see where we can expand to with that.
Have we thought any about kind of what this looks like as far as like customer retention or kind of, I guess, being in communication with that customer for these big life moments?
Totally. I mean, to be honest, we don't spend at the moment, we don't spend any paid acquisition dollars on baby. So it is really kind of organic growth through our own existing community. And because we, from a wedding standpoint, right, are often a part of a couple's journey for 12, 15, 18 months, right? We're talking to them many, many times throughout this experience. Mm-hmm. We know that, you know, couples recommend Zola to each other. You attend a wedding, you see a Zola invite, you're like, let me check that out, or a website, right? When it gets to your wedding, shop the registry, same thing. So, you know, we are very much, like I said, organically growing. We're just marketing Zola Baby, you know, amongst our own audience and then, you know, through some PR efforts. But yes, we're not even spending there yet. And I think that just goes to show the like true customer experience that our couples get with Zola, that they want to see that, you know, through to the next thing.
Yeah. I think what's notable about that is that organic in today's digital atmosphere has just become harder and harder to come by. Just you talk about pay to play and things like that. So talk to me about the importance of organic for you guys, given that's the case.
Yeah, this is a very interesting, you know, industry, right? Because it's such an emotional and personal thing that your, you know, product is participating in. And I think that, you know, at least for places that I've worked, this is definitely like where life cycle efforts play such a crucial role. I think, you know, people are often are very fixated on like the acquisition. And of course you have to get them, but the experience that somebody has is so important, because if you can help solve their problem or, you know, make their wedding planning easier through multiple touch points, right, they become very loyal to you. And I think that's where, you know, the product experience matters, the customer service experience matters, all these things work together. And so the ability to retain people, move them to like adopting mm-hmm. a new product that you're offering is, I mean, the dream is to do it organically, right? So that you don't have to like pay to reacquire them. But I think there's so much that goes into it. And I mean, to me, it's like down to the details of how your brand speaks. Are you relatable? Mm-hmm. Like I said, all the way through, you know, the customer service experience, which it's so important too, right? Like if you have an issue and you get great service, and that's, you know, another piece I'd say Zola really prides itself on and excels is like, you have an issue, we will help you with it. You need someone to hop on the phone to show, you know, your grandma how to buy a gift off the registry, we will also do that. So I think all those things together contribute to the word of mouth kind of organic piece of it.
Yeah. Walk me through some of the other strategies that you guys have for that organic word of mouth. Is it emails? Is it newsletters? Kind of how do we reacquire those people organically?
Yeah, I think there's a few components. I mean, one is the fact that guests attend weddings and they're often in a similar life stage. And so the guest facing touch points, like buying a gift off someone's registry and realizing that, oh, a cash fund is an option, or we could do this as a group gift, or, you know, the experience that you have as a guest informs many things about your future wedding. And so it is a very natural place of organic growth, right? In terms of this kind of guest experience translates to your future experience. So that's one component of it. Our emails, SMS program are a huge component, right? So if I, you know, if you're searching for a wedding website and that happens to be the paid touch point where I acquire you, once you come into the Zola universe, right, the emails are there to help guide you to the next thing. And so we focus a lot on what that retention experience is like. Am I speaking to you in a way that relates to you? Can I show you all the things that, you know, we offer? And that gets you to start say, oh, well, Zola also makes like save the dates perfect. I'm going to, you know, work on my website and I had such a great experience with this product. Sure, I'll try their save the dates. Or yes, I can see how, you know, a different Zola product integrates perfectly into this like ecosystem and everything's made easy. So I think it's really a combination of, you know, the kind of life cycle retention tactics, the actual experience guests have. And then, you know, I think the heart of it all, which is really that our product ecosystem was really built intertwined. And so as soon as couples use it, they're like, oh my God, this is amazing. And it all made this so much easier. But that's something you learn once you get in. So,
yeah,
you know, it's our job to hook you and then keep you.
I'm picturing a Zola multiverse here where we go with you from the wedding registry to the baby registry to college to pets. Yeah.
I mean, the possibilities are endless. Let's find out. endless.
I'd love to talk about kind of, obviously, the digital media landscape is changing a lot, but I'd love to know what media channels, what levers are you guys pulling right now, whether it be out of home, direct mail, that type of thing?
Yeah. You know, we love to test and learn. So we definitely have our kind of tried and true channels. We, you know, focus a lot on search. This is a very high intent audience when they're searching. So that's, you know, a big piece of the puzzle for us. Same with SEO in terms of producing, you know, content that brings somebody in, where, you know, do streaming and audio and social, all the kind of major players. And we test in and out throughout, you know, peaks and engagement season. We'll often run out of home campaigns. So we really are everywhere, I would say. And I think that for this category in particular, and, you know, the digital landscape's challenging, but we're certainly trying to figure out how to best stand out on TikTok, which I think is sort of undoubtedly like the place that our target demo is spending a lot of time. And so that's definitely a place where I'd say we put the most both organic and paid attention.
Yeah.
You know, with Instagram, it's of course more challenging to make strides from an organic standpoint. So we sort of try to kind of balance those things.
I think what's notable about TikTok is while it's great in terms of like virality and things like that and brand awareness, it comes at the cost of producing a lot of content constantly. So talk to me a little bit about how you guys manage that.
Yeah, it's wild, right? So we thankfully have some team members internally that have always been comfortable shooting content. And I think the other nice part is, you know, one of the people internally who does appear on our TikTok the most is also someone who's engaged. And so there's this real level of authenticity, which is, it's like, it's a person who's engaged. They're also working here. So they have, you know, lots of information on the wedding planning process. And I think the nice part of TikTok, despite how much volume you have to produce, is it's a phone yeah. in your hand, you know, maybe like a little light. I don't know. I'm not good at content creation, but like, it's not that much equipment. Right. And so I think there's something pretty interesting about the fact that you can do that. I think so many brands are great at using their own employees and team members to create relatable, fun content. And so I think that's been a plus in our ability to create things, and the fact that we have people who like doing it and are interested in doing it. But we also do supplement that with like partnering with some content creation agencies who help us produce more at a higher volume. And yeah. I think from what I'm seeing over time is I think it's pretty difficult to do without a combo model, unless you have, you know, a ton of resources where people are creating stuff every day.
Yeah. I almost wonder if I'm assuming the people that do the TikTok for you guys in-house have regular day jobs and then they also do TikTok, correct?
Okay. Yes. Exactly.
With TikTok as big as it is, I almost wonder if we'll ever get to the point where there's like residential in-house TikTok, just like in-house influencers.
I mean, it's funny you say that, because it's a conversation like we've had internally where, you know, it is a skill to be able to produce content and to do it in a way that people want to watch you, you know? And I think sometimes when I'm personally just scrolling through TikTok, because obviously I feel like you need to see what's mm-hmm. out there, I do find myself being like, why am I watching this person? Like, I don't even, you know yeah. what I mean? I don't even know why I'm watching them. And so, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that became, you know, if you think about it, right? It's like the salary of a person who could just produce this much for you is probably cheaper than like production costs mm-hmm. for other things. And if you can find the right angle and you can find, you know, the way to do it with, you know, the rawness that is TikTok and stand out, you can have major gains, right? It's not like, I think that's what's so cool, I guess, for Marketing Challenge, and something I think about often is, it's not a money thing, right? It's not like who's going to go produce the most beautiful, emotional, like, you know, TV spot. It's like who could pick up their phone and make you laugh, or, you know,
yeah, exactly,
convince you that this product is worth your time.
Exactly. We're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsor. Then we'll be right back. We talked about the organic side of things, but I want to talk about the paid side of things. In conversations that I've had, it seems like TikTok is fantastic again for the brand awareness, but the virality doesn't always equate to sales and direct response and clicks and things like this. So how do you guys, how are you guys thinking about that as a paid channel?
Yeah, I think you sort of just said it. And, you know, we've done a lot of testing in terms of how do you drive conversion from this? And I would imagine for, you know, CPG companies, it is something that works to a degree, mm-hmm. right? Or, you know, integrating into TikTok Shop, I think you have to have a tangible product for the conversion-based campaigns to work. So for us, it's really, we're still very much in a learning mode. And I think, you know, TikTok's still learning how to handle mm-hmm. various advertiser campaigns. So I think it's more about figuring out what is the, you know, is it view through, you know, 6 seconds viewed? Is it the engagement? Is it the clicks? Like, what's the right campaign? But I don't expect for our type of business for TikTok to immediately convert to someone signing up. And so we just don't treat the channel that way. But I think where it can have impact is down funnel for us, that you've been, you know, exposed or you're considering Zola, and that same person is pretty likely to then go do a search mm-hmm. for some specific product. And I think that's where, of course, harder to measure, but we can see impact from those consideration campaigns.
Yeah. Now, here's a tricky question, but would you guys say that you're spending more with those things, you know, in mind? Are you guys spending more on TikTok than in the past?
Than in the past, yes, but I would not say that it is, you know, a top channel that we spend on, because I think there's, you know, especially for direct to consumer brands, right? We really do have to measure pretty directly the impact it can have on the business. And I think there's still a lot of tests and learning for us to do to, you know, again, truly understand where it's contributing in the funnel.
Absolutely. And last sticky question, would you be able to say what kind of the percentage of increase there was?
Oh, I could try to get back to you. I don't know off the top of my head. You know, I think that, you know, I think for my, like, I've worked at big brands in the past, and I think those are the brands that, you know, have lots of flexibility to just say, I'm going to, you know, invest millions. I'm going to go all in on this because I see your, you know, time spent, and I see the growth of your audience. And it's like a big bet that I'm making. And I don't think that's a luxury, so to speak, that, you know, growing brands have. And so I think we increase, but we tread lightly.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Kind of along those same lines, I'm curious, are there any channels that you guys are experimenting with, whether it be new ad formats? We've got AI on the horizon. Threads is still making a name for itself.
Sure. We have done a lot of experimentation, I'd say, like on channels as a whole. And, you know, it's different for every business. And I'd say it's certainly like a challenge I face, as I often am, like, you know, programmatic buying with, you know, using our own first party data, this has to work. And then sometimes we try and it's like, it actually doesn't quite work for us. So I don't think there's, you know, one size fits all, but, you know, we definitely see that, you know, benefits of audio and podcasts. And I think that's been great and makes a lot of sense for our audience. From an AI standpoint, I think, you know, the space that we're most trying to crack with that is like what its impact on SEO is going to be. And that's a little bit of a Wild West unknown right now. But I think, I don't know if you have the like generative AI kind of beta in your Google search, but I have it in mine. And, you know, you can very quickly see that if you ask a fairly concrete question that only has like one answer, the generative AI is pretty great. It's like, you never have to click a link. It's all in the top for you.
Yeah.
And I think that is going to be very interesting. I think more subjective questions, it's hard to say what they're going to pull in. And then, you know, that's on my phone, so smaller screen. I think if you look at the other things Google's testing, there's a lot of like right rail, you know, suggestions. And I think that's for businesses that, where SEO is a really important component. The AI is, you know, there's a lot to crack there.
Yeah, I've even seen AI, I think X and Instagram both have AI included, just in like search functions, chatbots, and things like that. And I do wonder if that'll be like kind of another front that advertisers will be able to get in on, kind of as that moves forward.
Yeah, I'm not sure, you know, I would guess, but I think it does all sort of tie back still to the importance of, you know, the content that people are producing, and is it providing the answer that Google deems the most relevant answer for the person? And I said, I'll be curious to see like how the more like subjective topics get handled in that. Like, it's a little bit easier to be like, how many teaspoons in a tablespoon? It's like, it's only going to give you one answer and it's super helpful. But when you are trying to explore, does that experience help you or does it harm you? And then I think the other interesting piece to go back to TikTok is a lot of people are searching for things on TikTok and Instagram and not on Google. And so how that experience evolves, like, I, for one, am very eager for TikTok to sell true search. You know, because, I mean, you said it right. It's like wedding talks everywhere, but I would love to be able to say somebody searching for save the dates in TikTok. Like, I want to show up there. And I don't think they've evolved fully to that. I know they're like testing, but it is pretty fascinating to see like the search behavior shift that I do think is really happening from Google and clicking links to obviously the visual experience that TikTok and Instagram provide.
Yeah, there's been a real pendulum shift. Even within my own life, I used to start searches mostly on Google. Now I start them, I started them on TikTok, even, you know, looking for like reviews on Amazon just to kind of get a better sense of the product that I'm looking for or the service.
Totally. I was saying this actually to my boss yesterday, who doesn't use TikTok, but I almost exclusively now search for recipes on TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
And the Google experience is so much worse because it's like, I got to click in the link, then I got to hit jump to recipe because obviously it's like a long SEO optimized blog post. But when I'm on TikTok, it's like, if I see 2.3 million saves, obviously that's the review proof right there. And you get the video. It's like, to me, that converted my just like consumer mindset on what TikTok can do when I started to realize like how much better it was just for that as a category then. And so, I mean, I'm sure people do that for so many more things than I use it for, but it is a pretty fascinating behavior shift. So be interesting. See what happens.
Pinterest has a pretty fair stake in that game as well. Kind of also at the intersection of like search, weddings, and things like this. So kind of, do you guys have a Pinterest strategy? How does it fit into how you guys go your marketing?
Yeah, we do. From a paid standpoint, we certainly are on Pinterest and we try to, you know, exactly what you just said, right? The search component of it, we try to buy against as many of those terms and show up. And it'll be also interesting to see how Pinterest evolves because there's a slightly different product experience. But we know people who are planning a wedding are on all of the platforms, right? So it's like the more touch points that we can have with them, the better. And we know people are searching, tagging, you know, searching for wedding venues through Instagram because they see a photo and they like it, you know, and then hopefully they come to Zola and get the details of that venue too to inquire. But you know, it's hard to shift consumer behavior when they're leading it. So if people are really following this like visual first approach for their experience, right, we have to make sure we're showing up there in the right way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Kind of keeping on the same track as social media. When you came in, you guys launched your first influencer ambassador program. So I would love to kind of get a sense of where that's out currently and kind of what's next for it.
Yeah. So we have gone through a few iterations of how we leverage influencers. And you're right. We first started with this ambassador program and we sought out partners to sort of go on the journey with. And one thing that we have actually learned is that one or two strong pieces of content from the right partner is kind of enough. And unless, you know, their whole online content creator presence is all about wedding planning, having like 6 to 8 touch points with them throughout the journey doesn't necessarily feel as it's not as additive, I guess I would say. And so I think what we learned from that is it's important, you know, for us to, again, have representation across all kinds of couples who are getting married, show different types of weddings, have people speak to their own experience in different ways. And so we're still seeking the right partners in that regard, but we're also really saying like one or two pieces of content where you authentically talk about how Zola is helping you and you help choose, like, was it, you know, our websites that you love the most? Was it a different tool? Was it the registry? Like, I think we're very focused on making sure it feels authentic and we know that stuff works the best. And so we then, you know, leverage influencer content from a paid standpoint on Instagram and TikTok as best as we can. And we've sort of found that balance works well.
Notably, the influencer marketing space and creator economy are really changing to a big degree. So kind of curious, how has you guys' relationship with influencers changed over the last couple of years?
I think that we, I don't know if it's changed. I think that we maybe approach it in a few ways. Like one is we get a lot of inbound also from influencers who hit life stage and then are like, I'd love to partner with you. And, you know, we try to approach that in certain ways. We definitely, we have like fun engagement based like journey boxes that we send influencers that we think are a brand fit. I mean, that's always our first layers. Like we want to make sure that anybody we're working with is somebody that also feels true to the, you know, Zola brands.
Yeah.
So we try to have as many relationships as we can. That's different from how many influencers we were able to pay for a partnership. But I think that, you know, people end up feeling very passionately about Zola, which is great. And so sometimes it's really just the like community management relationship piece where we kind of, you know, just communicate with them or, you know, people organically also post and are like, I'm using this and I just want to share it with, you know, whatever my followers. And we try to amplify that. So I think just the authenticity of it's the most important part.
Got it. Got it. I think the elephant in the room, anytime that I'm talking to marketers, is quote unquote economic headwinds and marketing budgets be under scrutiny, which is hard to do in a pay-to-play space when your job is marketing. So talk to me a little bit about how you're managing to do your job. How does it impact your work knowing that marketing budgets are under scrutiny and there's all these different channels, brand awareness and things like that to have to combat?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely challenging. I think my approach to it is often that like the creative matters even within the quote unquote like performance. And I don't think people should speak about the two things separately, but performance and brand or whatever, but like good creative improves performance. And so I think that's a message I generally try to reinforce is, you know, performance ads are still often better when they're delivering the brand message in a more relevant way. So I think that's one piece of it is not necessarily separating those things. And then I think the other part is, you know, it's the hardest thing to do, but it's trying to think about how to stay relevant or do scrappier things and be a part of the conversation. And that's, of course, easier said than done. But it's the type of stuff we love to talk to our PR agency about weekly of, you know, what are people really talking about? How do we share our own lens on it? How are we a part of the conversation? The community management piece, I think, is really important and often forgotten. But, you know, our team saw a TikTok of someone who had not gotten their wedding band and it was like 2 days before their wedding. And we had been working with a jewelry partner already. And so we were like, hey, we should replace this person's ring. And we messaged them and we did that really quickly. And of course, they share it out. And I don't know, don't quote me on the number, but it's like that gets whatever, even if it's 30,000 people like save that, right? That's not bad for, you know, a pretty quick jumping in and helping you moment. And so I think there are these like small, scrappy ways that you can make up for these things. And then I think the last piece we sort of think about is, right, staying true to our brand and the messages that we want to deliver and outside of what we offer every day. And I think a big piece of that for Zola is, you know, we're always addressing the kind of right for everybody to get married. And last year, unfortunately, that was like a much bigger topic in the news. And so we were very vocal in activating and commenting on that. But there are other things from a brand standpoint that we want to kind of like push the narrative on. And we have before, like we sort of have questioned why we've all been conditioned to think that like women can't propose to men in hetero relationships.
Yeah.
And it's not that we're saying you should do this or you should do this. We're just saying like, why is that the way it is? And I think there are a bunch of these topics like, why do you feel like you're bucking tradition if both your parents walk you down the aisle instead of like just your dad. And I think for us as a brand that wants to make sure we're championing modern couples and what they want for their weddings, there's a lot on that subject that, you know, we want to talk about. And we've done it again in like op-eds in different ways, but we think a lot about how to bring that to life through, you know, more consumer initiatives.
That's a really interesting point. I know back in 2019, you guys had Hallmark Gate, is what I'm calling it.
Yes.
Parted ways after the same-sex couple ad. So obviously this, you know, the champion of this space goes back a while. But I'm curious how, with marketing budget, again, under scrutiny, how do you manage profitability with brand purpose?
Yeah. So, I mean, to be honest, I think it's finding ways to do it that don't require a lot of dollars and being able to show the impact of that on awareness, right? And I think that's the way you sort of have to weigh everything. There are economic pressures on the business. You have to prioritize your choices, right? Both in terms of where you spend time as a team, right? For every time, you know, we want to think about this brand initiative that we like think or hope might garner, you know, enough PR to impact our awareness, we weigh that against some tactical things that have to get done. And so I think it's just a matter of the prioritization of those things. But I really do think you can be rather like quick and nimble. Like we did do when the Respect for Marriage Act was up for a vote, we did a bunch of things around that, but we sent invites to senators to vote for the Respect for Marriage Act. So, you know, there are ways I think you could do it without sacrificing your budgets and still see impact.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The last thing that I want to ask you, which is a philosophical question. We started with a fun one. We're ending with a philosophical one. What would you say is the biggest challenge facing marketers right now?
I think it's the same challenge that has existed for a long time, which is measurement. I think that there's no perfect solution. And, you know, maybe that's okay. But I think when we get to the cookie-less world, it gets even harder. And I think that really understanding like a multi-touch attribution model with confidence is very difficult. And so I think marketing measurement will continue to sort of be like a cross-platform conundrum. But, you know, that's definitely the thing that I find hardest when people talk about, right, marketers' challenge to deliver on brands and deliver on performance, or however you want to talk about those two things together separately. You know, when you are growing brands, you are delivering on a lot of short-term objectives. And you also want to be setting the company up for the long term. But long-term investments take a long time to deliver results. And so I think finding the balance of that's going to continue to be a challenge for many, many brands.
Absolutely. Listen, V, I cannot thank you enough for spending some time with me today on the DigiDay podcast. Based on our conversation, I'm amending my earlier statement about my dream wedding being going to the courthouse and then going to an open bar. Now it's going to the courthouse, going to an open bar, and having cash as gifts. So,
perfect. Thank you so much for having me. This was great.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the DigiDay podcast. Thank you to everyone for listening. And please don't forget to share this episode with someone who you think would enjoy it. You can even rate us and leave us a comment on Apple Podcasts. We'll be back next week with another episode of the DigiDay podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.